You're listening to the NFL Draft Bible Podcast Network, part of Sports Illustrated, giving you daily NFL Draft, Dynasty, and Devy Fantasy Football podcasts.
Welcome to the Prospect Profits, presented by Sports Illustrated's NFL Draft Bible Podcast Network. I am your host, Alec Polito, joined by my co-host, as always, Lorenz Linebiba. On today's show, we'll be discussing NFL Week 5 and College Football Week 6. This is a daily podcast feed filled with analysts and experts providing unmatched insight into the NFL, college football, and fantasy football. We provide this feed ad-free, and all we ask is in return you leave us a five-star review and check out our written content at si.com/NFL/draft. Thank you guys for tuning in here. Really excited to dive into another week of football. We had a big week in college football, big week in the NFL. Lorenz, how are you doing today? You ready to chop it up?
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm definitely ready. I mean, I think especially on the NFL side, it was more of a big week, but certainly one big time upset in college football that we'll have to talk about for sure. And I'm excited about it. How are you today, Alec?
Dude, I'm doing good. I'm excited. We're recording this on Monday. It'll come out on Tuesday tomorrow, but I'll be flying out to the hub tomorrow. So I'm real excited to, you know, dive into that. Obviously, they've been doing some great things for some players trying to get back in the league. Shout out to the hub. Getting into this thing, though, obviously you talked about there was a big time upset that we will have to discuss. Before we get into that one, let's talk college football here. Number 11 Kentucky undefeated makes their way to Athens, Georgia. And, well, it's kind of how we predicted last weekend on the tailgate show. Georgia handled business. I will say it wasn't – Kentucky did not play bad. I was fairly impressed, but I also want to say that, you know, none of us expected them to compete with Georgia in this game. So Georgia wins it, obviously. Did you catch eyes on this game? Any thoughts on it?
Yeah, I thought this was more of a – this more so showed how good Georgia is than it being any indictment on Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Who Kentucky, man, they pulled out everything out of the box in terms of trick plays on offense and reverses and whatnot to try and get some yards on this defense. But at the end of the day, this defense, and especially that defensive line, I mean, they just proved – I think they're getting better week in and week out, which is crazy to say if you've watched them for a couple of weeks. But Kentucky, they pride themselves in being a good and being a well-coached offensive line. And man, there was constant penetration. Obviously, the play of Jordan Davis went that was all around on social media, where he basically just walks into the backfield. You know, they called him a dancing bear on the broadcast, which I think is very fitting. But also Carter, number 88, the other defensive lineman there, is looking incredible. I've talked a lot about Trayvon Walker. I think Devontae Wyatt took the type of step from just being more of an athlete on the interior to being an actual player and to being a football player that we wanted to see. And he's playing himself into day two consideration. So it's just a loaded, just those are just the interior guys. You got Nolan Smith, who's gotten better, Adam Anderson coming off the edge, and Kentucky. They were just no match for Georgia, but like I said, still like what Kentucky's doing. They were 6-0 for a reason, now 6-1 for a reason, but this is just a tier or two. Georgia is just a tier or two ahead of Kentucky.
Yeah, and, you know, we did expect it going in, the Georgia win. I think we both – well, I know we both predicted it last week. But I will say, hey, this is not just huge for Kentucky. This is huge for their head coach of Kentucky here, because there's some big-time jobs open after this, and to do this in the SEC with a program like Kentucky, where, you know, if you know the school of Kentucky, they put more of their resources into that basketball program. This football program has obviously had some players, but to get this team competing, and I don't think that they dropped very far in the rankings, because the expectation was for them to lose to Georgia here. This is a huge deal. I want to get into another team though that did not live up to expectations. Obviously, number one Georgia did. Number two Iowa did not. Coming off of a hangover week, you could say, after they beat Penn State last week in that 3-4 matchup, they get bumped up to number two here after an Alabama loss, and then they come out and Purdue kind of stomps them. You know, I think the final score is 24-7. David Bell had 11 receptions, 240 yards, one TD. I want to get into his draft outlook with you, but look, we talked about this. Iowa did not have a tough schedule moving forward. Their toughest game would come in the Big Ten championship if they were so lucky to get there. But they really just were going to be able to cruise through. And 1 week after talking about that, they lose to Purdue, who is a good team. They're ranked top 25 now. I believe they're I think they are 25. But, you know, do you get to see this game? What are your thoughts on the disappointing outing for Iowa?
So we went from Iowa being in the driver's seat until the Big Ten championship with no ranked opponents left on the schedule to them now in their first game after that big win that put them in the driver's seat over Penn State, bumping them out of that spot.
Right.
And, man, they didn't just lose. They got absolutely crushed, and Purdue had a great game plan. They were able to move the ball through the air, and David Bell just looked incredible. Yeah, draft outlook-wise, I don't know how you see it, but I thought he was sort of a third, fourth-round receiver going into the season. Obviously been really productive there for a while. I think this year he looks like a better athlete than what I initially thought. I still don't think he's going to be some elite athlete or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But he's got reliable hands. He can win in the air. I think he's still getting better as a route runner, and he's showing a bit more of that juice that you need. I mean, you could see it just watching the game, but you need some juice to pull off 240 yards, and he sure did. After the catch, he's tough to bring down. I think he fits the mold of what teams are looking for out of their receivers nowadays. And I think he's firmly played himself into the day two, maybe even second round, maybe even end of the first round. I wouldn't go there just yet, but He's firmly cemented himself as one of the top receivers in this class, in my opinion.
I agree with you. I think that he's at least played himself into a second round type, second round type grade that he'll get at the end of the year. Preseason, I think I did have him fourth-ish round, you know, that early day three. But hey, he's been super productive all year, has shown it. I'm definitely excited to dive back into his tape at the end of the year. And this is one that'll be, you know, this is a defense that has been very, very good. The Iowa defense, and they were, I believe, missing some people in the secondary in this game. Obviously that factors in, but nonetheless, this is a very deep and talented group, and he tore them up. So, real disappointing for Iowa, as it looks like, even if they were to win, you know, their only chance to get to that playoff right now kind of looks like they're going to have to win out, get to that Big Ten championship and dominate that game. And even if they do that, it's going to be difficult for them to get back into the playoff here. They really, really had to win out. We talk about this, the privilege that they had from not having a tough competitors until the Big Ten championship is almost their downfall, because they won't have enough good games to really push themselves back up. Now, of course, a couple teams lose, you know, they win a Big Ten championship. Some teams fall to two losses. You could see them sneak back in, sure, but it's going to be really difficult for Iowa to get back there. Want to talk now next here about LSU and Tyrion Davis Price. Well, Tyrion Davis Price beats Fournette's LSU rushing record of 287. They win 49-42 over Florida, a team that has had a lot of ups and downs this season, being super competitive with Alabama and then losing some games that they really shouldn't be losing. There's some other news come out of LSU, which I would like to talk about in a second, but thoughts on Tyrion Davis Price and the LSU win?
Yeah, let's go with the good news first, depending on how, how you see it and what your perspective is, obviously. But Tyrion Davis-Price was someone who I really liked on last year's tape, and he had a slow start to the season. And I just didn't think that LSU offense, and especially that offensive line, played to what it was built to be. And maybe he didn't really, for reasons maybe related to Coach Orgeron and what else is going on in that program. But against Florida, who had some awful second level of the defense performance, let me make that very clear. Those linebackers, just with the really rough one, he was unbelievable, though. He was running over guys. He was showing that long speed. At his size, he's in the 220s, so he's a big guy. He's not one of those smaller players, and he's someone who, as a third-year junior, if he comes out, I think he could be a solid starter potentially in the NFL down the road, because I do think Tyrion Davis-Price is someone who can handle the load of maybe getting 15 to 20 carries, and he's got solid vision. He checks a lot of boxes from a balance perspective. Is he ever going to be the best running back in the league? I don't know. I don't think so. But especially in a committee where you get someone in there that's a little more dynamic in space, I think he projects as a very – or that's what I did think going into the season as that type of guy at the next level. Now, season didn't start off well, but against Florida, he finally showed what he's all about and how good he is.
Yeah, and it was an impressive performance, obviously. He's someone who could be finding himself – creeping up draft boards. Let's now talk about a little bit of the, I don't know what to say about it, but what I will say is this is going to be a coaching carousel type year. It's very rare we see not only one program with USC, but two historic and huge programs with head coach candidates openings. You're going to see some big time coaches vying for these jobs, because you know, it's one thing if it's like an SEC school is available for a coach to jump from group of five. There are some group of five schools that could potentially have their head coach jump all the way to, I don't know how you see this, but I think that LSU and USC are both top 10 coaching jobs in college football. When you talk about the resources allocated to you, the history of the program, the fan support, these are two high caliber jobs. And we are speaking of this because the news came out that LSU and Ed Orgeron have agreed to part ways. My guess is more so LSU said, hey, thanks for the national championship. We got to cut ties here, my man. And he was like, all right, sounds good. So I think that, you know, this is, you know, and I'd love to hear your take on this. I think we have two top 10 college football jobs available, and you might even be able to make the argument that you have two top five jobs available. LSU is a historic and huge SEC program. Well, USC is an historic Pac-12 program, but what are your thoughts on this? Now, are there any coaches that you see potentially making that jump where, you know, from, you know, Cincinnati's number two, maybe we could see their coach jump. We could see, what are your thoughts?
I mean, you're right. Both these coaching jobs are unbelievable. LSU, if you talk about just from a recruiting side, if you talk about being in Louisiana and the type of athletes that they got coming out and that they've had really historically, I mean, we all know about the DBs, but wide receivers and even on the lines, offensive line, defensive line, this is a roster that is a lot better than their record would show. I mean, they do have to figure out their quarterback situation, but once they do, I think this is a team that has guys down the road. Talk about B.J. Ojulari. Couldn't take my eyes off him. That guy's going to be going first round next year. That's all I can tell you. Mason Smith is a true freshman. Just talking on that defensive line, obviously the DBs and everything is there, and Coach O did a good job of recruiting there, but they just never were able to put it on the field after Joe Brady and that whole crew left. I think USC might even be better. I mean, if someone can actually figure out how to recruit in L.A., and really keep all those prospects there, have them not go to the SEC, but have them stay at USC. I think, I mean, it's been a while. It's been almost 20 years since they've been a national force, really competing for national. Well, 15 years, not 20. But if someone could figure that out, they could be right up there in two or three years. So these are both jobs where you can have success and you can have a lot of success. I'm talking competing for national championships quickly.
Yeah, I agree with you. And do you have any candidates that you think of off the top of your head that, you know, maybe give like three candidates that could make that jump? Like, for I saw some names out there, and obviously this is, you know, this is just what I had seen. Lane Kiffin comes to mind, and I know he had already coached USC, but you know, that name comes up and it's like, you're like, no, he's at Ole Miss. And then you're like, oh wait, that's how crazy these jobs are, is that we're talking about, even if that jump is only like up a little bit, it's still such a tremendous jump, because you're talking about the absolute resources that you get to work with, and the geographical area that you're working with. These are two phenomenal jobs that you might actually see coaches like make that small of a jump. It almost reminds you of, you know, Nick Saban going from LSU to Alabama, you know, like just a small jump, but it's a huge jump. So yeah. Are there any coaches that come to mind for that?
I got three guys that are all kind of similar in the sense that they're Ohio guys and they are Midwest type guys, but these guys are program builders that might want to take the jump. So Matt Campbell at Iowa State, I think he's been billed even for NFL jobs for a while now. I think he's sort of maxed out what you can accomplish at Iowa State. I don't know which program will be the better fit, because he's kind of made the name off of not getting the five stars, not getting the big-time recruits, and still building a great program just because you can't really get him at Iowa State. I think he's a great coach. I don't know how well he fits that type of program, but maybe if someone from a, I'll just call it like a B-tier SEC school, like Ole Miss, which no disrespect to them. So imagine Lane jumps from them to LSU. Right. He might want to, he could fill that role maybe a little bit better. Mark Stoops at Kentucky, you just alluded to him a little bit earlier. He's also more of a Midwest guy, but he knows how to win in the SEC. So I think for him, the logical fit out of these two, if they do want to go that route, would be LSU. And then Luke Fickell, I think, from Cincinnati, you can't really discount him because he's got a lot of experience at Ohio State. And now can he build maybe a program like USC in the mold of an Ohio State, that they're not an SEC, not a Southeast program, but they play and win and dominate like a program located there and operating from there. So those are three names just coming to my mind. I don't know if you got anyone else.
Yeah, I mean, those are the ones that came to mind immediately. Was obviously you look at a guy like Fickell, who has done some great job at Cincinnati, Stoops at Kentucky, you know, other guys that I had seen potentially. Could Jimbo Fisher try and make a jump? I don't love it. I don't think it's great, but he is at Texas A&M right now. So that could be, an SEC jump. I had wondered, and it's just a thought here, if we could potentially see an NFL coach jump backwards. And I shouldn't say jump backwards, because it's a phenomenal, you might even be getting more pay to do these jobs with the resources that they have. I had wondered if potentially we could see that. I was looking through it, and I don't know who would do it. That being said, I guess if we see an NFL coach fired, like let's say Joe Judge gets fired at the end of this year, which I think is a realistic possibility with the way the Giants have played, could you see him potentially get an LSU job? Obviously, he was at Mississippi State for a while. He's got the connections to the SEC. Would he make some sense? I don't know, but it's a different world, the college recruiting world. So I think to be safe, you're probably looking at a college coach coming in. It's going to be something that we're going to have to probably spend a whole show covering. Excited we got to talk about it a little bit, though. Let's move on here to Treylon Burks making another another week where he makes the case for wide receiver one, 9 receptions, 109 yards, 2 touchdowns. But your bullish pick on Arkansas has not worked out the last couple weeks. They lose 38-23 to Auburn. Take it away, man.
Yeah, just not good enough from a team perspective right now, especially on defense. I think that's where they're hurting right now, and that's what they'll have to figure out going into next season. Still think this is a good football team. I mean, the final score doesn't really show it in this one, but there were points where they were close against the Auburn team that they probably should have beat, but also against the Auburn team that's getting better every week. Here's the deal with SEC football. You can be good and still lose a fair amount of games week in and week out because just there's just no easy game really on the schedule unless you're playing Vanderbilt. So Treylon Burks, though, I think he's just showing that he's bigger, faster, stronger than everybody else right now. He's so dangerous on go routes and crossing routes just because no one can guard him. No one can stop him. Then if KJ Jefferson sees single coverage on him, he's going to let it fly, and Treylon Burks is going to find a way to get down with it. So I know the kind of compared him to DK Metcalf last week. Still don't think he's that freaky and that type of a player, but in a wide receiver class that's a little bit down, you won't see traits in terms of size and athleticism like Treylon Burks anywhere else.
Yeah. Hey, let's go a little bit rapid fire here because we've got one more college football topic to talk about and then a couple NFL topics, but I think they're like quick hitters here. I want to first talk about Malik Willis. Quick hitter here. He had a rough passing game. What thoughts on this game?
Yeah, Malik Willis, they lose to Louisiana Monroe, which they shouldn't as Liberty, right. And he didn't have a great game. He did have a lot of work done on the ground, but three interceptions, not going to cut it. Man, this quarterback discussion, who's even going to end up going the first round, gets more and more interesting, not every week, not to be a prisoner of the moment, but I think there are a number of guys who've played themselves out of that conversation. Now we got people talking about Kenny Pickett potentially being in it. I think two guys that have sneaky just been good the whole year are Matt Corral and Carson Strong. I don't know how the NFL would perceive them. I think there's some issues with Corral. He's not the biggest guy, and he doesn't really come from a scheme that teams can easily translate. Strong's got some issues with his knee. So even with those guys, there's some pullback. Now Malik Willis, I thought he was in the driver's seat for being potentially the first quarterback off the board. Well, he's got a bad game now, three interceptions against – not a really great opponent, but I think if you're drafting him, you're looking at traits anyways. But
right,
I couldn't tell you right now. It's really all over the place, this class.
It is difficult. I can't even mention any other names right now that come to mind that are – I don't know if there's – honestly, as crazy as this is, I don't know how many guys are actually guaranteed first-round players right now at that quarterback position, and it's going to be real interesting how this class plays out. We'll get into that a ton in the offseason. Move into the NFL real quick here. Trevon Diggs, another interception, goes for a touchdown. He is leading the NFL in interceptions. Is he an all or nothing quarterback right now? There's been a lot of talk about it. You know, he's given up a lot of yards, but has the interceptions, which is obviously so crucial. Is he all or nothing right now?
Yeah, he's a bit in that Marcus Peters mold right now. I don't think anyone, I mean, off of statistics, people might say he's the best corner in the league. I don't think if you're going from a snap-by-snap coverage perspective basis, mm-hmm. anyone's going to make that case. I don't know if anyone's going to make that case of him being a top-five guy even, because they're just so many talented players just from a skills perspective. But, man, is he productive right now. He's got a knack for the football. He's coming up with those interceptions. And it's big, and it's really helping this Dallas team that – just had a terrible defense going into the year. And I think personally, I mean, you're a Giants fan, but I think the NFC East race is over earlier than it began. Dallas is 5-1, one loss, close loss week one against the Bucs, have beat everybody else. Washington and Philly are 2-4. None of these teams, especially offensively, excite me at all. And then the Giants are 1-5. Not even going to get into the Giants.
What, the 38-3 loss didn't, or 38-11 as they score a garbage time touchdown didn't excite you?
Not really.
Yeah, no. I'm throwing in the towel. It's the NFC East is over. Dallas is a really good team. They deserve the credit that they're getting. They're so talented on offense, and the defense is doing what it has to do to win. And honestly, there's a lot of talent on this defense too. Oso Digizua, friend of the show, has been phenomenal for them. And I think that Dallas has a legit shot at the NFC. I'm not saying that they're my favorite to win the NFC, but don't count them out when they get to the playoffs because they really do have a tremendous roster. But the NFC East is over. The Dolphins lost to the Jags as Brian Flores and Tua on the hot seat. I think for me personally, not yet. but it could be coming very soon. I think that you'd have to give them one more year, but hey, maybe they want to change. What do you think on this?
I mean, I will say this about Tua. While I don't think he is on the hot seat, I mean, like you said, he's going to have towards the end of this year, and then they already might be bringing someone in. But what this doesn't do right now is if someone like Deshaun Watson suddenly becomes available, you're not going to be looking at Tua. That he's not stopping you from getting that guy. That's what I'll say for him. It's a poor quarterback class, so I don't know, man. Brian Flores has done, I think, has built up some credit. I know he hasn't made the playoffs, but he really turned a terrible team around. It's weird to see them being as bad as they've been this season. It really is. They got to fix the offensive line. That's what really remains for a team that I still think is solid on defense if they got everyone out there. I don't think they're on the hot seat, but both these guys' seats are getting a little bit hotter.
It's warming up. It is warming up. Probably enough where if you put like an ice water there, the ice cubes would be gone fairly soon. But I don't think it's hot yet. I don't think they're on the hot seat. It's just warm. Ravens beat the Chargers this week, and they look dominant. And Lamar Jackson looked phenomenal again, as if anyone is surprised at this point. I think he has the most wins before the age of 25 at 35 wins. He's 35-8 in his career, which is just a ridiculous stat. And then the Cardinals beat up on the Browns, and they are now 6-0. Just quickly, Ravens, Cardinals, are these teams legit?
Oh, for sure. And they both had games that we expected to be top games, right, this week, and they crushed their opposition. Both of them did. Neither of these games were ever close. Mm-hmm. Ravens crushed the Chargers, Cardinals crushed the Browns, and both these teams in the AFC and NFC should be up there for as big-time favorites, top two or three in their relative conference.
Absolutely, and I want to give you a chance here to quickly shout out one of your running back one and the guy who went RB1 in the draft here, Najee Harris.
Yeah, the box score may not show it, but if you watch that Steelers game, I mean, this guy, he's already a difference maker for this offense just because of what he's able to do, breaking tackles and making things happen with the ball in his hands. I know the inside run game hasn't really been there. I do blame the offensive line for that. To some extent, Najee Harris got to be a little bit better than that, but what he's doing as a receiver, just running routes, getting open underneath and picking up extra yardage, I think shouldn't be discounted, and he's going to be a really good back for a long time for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Absolutely. He looks phenomenal, and he's going to be the focal point of that offense, I think, for years to come. And lastly, a guy who we were both pretty high on that shockingly drops to the sixth round, someone who you had said preseason, hey, don't be surprised if he wins that starting job at some point. Well, injuries happen to David Montgomery. He gets an opportunity here. Khalil Herbert has an excellent first start with 19 carries for 97 yards and a touchdown. He also added 15 receiving yards. But if you think about last week where he kind of came in and took over, he had another phenomenal week. He has been super productive for them. He is a really good pure runner, very one cut back, but he does it really well. What are your thoughts on the Khalil Herbert? I shouldn't say experiment, but the, I guess, development so far.
Yeah, Bears got a steal. Bears got a steal. 100%. And his processing and vision has really carried over. You just talked about the one cut and go. He's got great, really good creativity, finding creases, finding holes. I think he's got to run a little bit harder to really get this job full time and put his shoulder down, potentially break a tackle here or there. But he's doing a lot of the other stuff that usually goes unnoticed that won't be put on a highlight film for running backs. And you can be productive that way. And he was the third on the depth chart. I think he's going to be getting touches the rest of the way this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that he will. I don't think you can take him out of this lineup, and it'll bring to question what they'll do next year. I believe David Montgomery's contract is coming up fairly soon where they're going to make a decision on that. So we will see on that. Lorenz, that's all we got for today. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Prospect Profits presented by Sports Illustrated's NFL Draft Bible Podcast Network. We will be back next Tuesday with more Prospect Profits. But be sure to tune in tomorrow to hear our friends at the Dynasty Draft Room. Thank you guys, and we will see you later in the week with our live show.